Chapter 3. After leaving the now dormant wormhole behind, we had set course for another wormhole. Not the next closest wormhole. Unfortunately, the closest wormhole connected in the wrong direction from where we wanted to go. Despite Skippy's joke about setting course for a random blue star, we did have a particular destination planned. We made several Skippy-programmed jumps. Then, when we were in the middle of empty interstellar space, we humans programmed our very first own jump into the nav system by humans. Our very first. My main hope for our first jump was that we didn't blow up the ship. I checked the main bridge display for the vital details of ship status. Although I could see the same data anywhere on the ship with my tablet, it felt more real when I was sitting in the command chair on the bridge. The very bottom left corner of the display now had in small script the designator UNS Flying Dutchman. Skippy must have added that while I wasn't paying attention. The same letters, much larger, were on a new brass plaque above the door to the bridge and CIC compartments. The crew, including me, liked that. It made us sound official. The governments that made up comprised UN Expeditionary Forces Command suddenly decided a few days before we departed that they didn't like the name Flying Dutchman, and various other names were floated for consideration. I got the feeling their public relations people would have liked to run a worldwide naming contest on the internet if they'd had time, and if the nature of the big star carrier hanging in orbit wasn't classified. Navy officers around the world protested that changing a ship's name was traditionally bad luck. Skippy cut the argument short by stating that he liked the name Flying Dutchman, that he controlled all data systems aboard the ship, and that the UN could name our captured alien star carrier the good ship Lollipop for all he cared. It wouldn't change anything. In the frantic days before departure, trying to get the ship loaded with all the people, gear, and supplies we needed, I had no time for BS like caring what we called the ship. To our merry band of pirates, the ship's name was always going to be the Flying Dutchman anyway. When UNEF dropped the renaming idea, that was one less headache for me. Back home, I am sure the UN still has an international committee of highly paid people studying the issue of our ship's name. Don't worry. They will issue a report long before Earth's sun explodes, probably.
Jump complete, Desai announced from the pilot's seat.
Are we clear, Skippy? No unfriendlies in the area? I asked.
You tell me. You say you need to be able to fly this ship on your own, so look at the sensors yourself, Skippy said in a peevish tone.
I wasn't going to argue with him. He was mostly right. The cold, hard truth was that we did not need to be able to fly the ship on our own. What we did need was some sliver of hope that we might be able to fly the Dutchman on our own after Skippy left us. Clinging to that tiny bit of hope was the difference between a high-risk mission and a suicide mission. The crew, including myself, had signed up for a high-risk mission. Super high-risk, admittedly. Risk of the if-anything-goes-wrong-we-are-totally-screwed level.
Pilot?
Desai answered more slowly than was optimal, and she knew it.
We jumped to the right place within 700,000 kilometers.
The tone of her voice was not filled with confidence. She let out a breath she'd been holding in.
Yes, confirmed. Jump was successful.
She turned in her chair to look at me and gave me a thumbs up with a weak smile. Desai had programmed the jump herself. This was the first jump Skippy had not loaded into the autopilot for us. Skippy had grumbled and complained loudly at the delay, then refused to check the numbers for us.
All I'll tell you is you won't be jumping us into a star, is what he had said.
His grumbling about a delay was understandable. Desai had programmed the jump into the computer yesterday, and we then spent the intervening time checking that the program was correct. Three different teams of pilots and scientists had checked the programming. And that was after 2 days of analysis to decide what should be programmed into the Theranan navigation computer. Skippy reluctantly had restored the original Theranan operating system to the navigation system, running it parallel to his own access, making snarky comments about it the whole time. It wasn't the true original operating system, the Theranan ship AI. It was a dumbed-down version that allowed humans access and was simple enough for us to use. Skippy cautioned that if there was a glitch in the system after he left us, he would have no way to debug or fix it, to which I had responded that if there was a glitch anywhere in the navigation system software, that could only be Skippy's fault for screwing up the programming or missing something. That insulted his boundless ego enough for him to declare the software perfect,
better than perfect, for he had loaded in his own maintenance and repair subroutine into it. I never let on that I'd played him, so I could use that particular trick again. "Sensors," I called out to the people manning the consoles in the combat information center beyond the glass-like diamond composite bridge walls.
Nothing on the scopes that we can detect, sir," came the answer. That wasn't reassuring.
Without Skippy controlling the data feeds, the bridge and CIC displays didn't contain the helpful color-coding designation for Theranin, Maxolx, Jarapha, Kristang, Ruha, and unknown ships. No matter in this case, there was absolutely nothing on the scopes within a quarter light year. We'd deliberately jumped from the middle of nowhere to the middle of nowhere, and we'd only jumped the distance from Earth's sun to Jupiter, a small test for a first jump. If there had been anything dangerous in the area, Skippy would have told us. He was unhappy, not suicidal. We had jumped only a short distance and still missed the mark by over 500,000 kilometers. No way could we jump anywhere near a planet with that lousy accuracy. We needed to get better, a lot better, or the Dutchman would be spending a lot of time crawling through normal space. And we didn't have the time or fuel for that. We also had a limited supply of fixins for critical cheeseburgers in the galley. Our first jump wasn't an acceptable effort. The crew knew it.
The ship didn't explode, I observed. We didn't break the jump drive, and we didn't emerge in the middle of a planet or next to a Theranin battle group.
Good enough for a first jump. We'll debrief tomorrow morning. In the meantime, Skippy, can you program the next jump? We need to get moving.
Whoa, slow down, monkeys. Have you analyzed the jump drive system? Are the coils calibrated and ready for another jump?
Pilot, I asked.
The drive charge indicator on the bottom of the main display read 87%, good for several regular jumps or one really long jump with the magical modifications Skippy had made to the Theranin's crappy jump drive.
It looks like it is okay, Desai answered slowly.
It looks like it's okay, Skippy scoffed.
Okay, such a precise term. I'm completely impressed by your professionalism. Consider that if the jump drive is not okay, another jump could rupture space-time and destroy the aft part of the ship, leaving us stranded here in interstellar space forever. By us, I mean me, because you air breathers will be out of luck once the backup power fails.
Yep, I'll be here, alone, surrounded by the dry, dusty corpses of monkeys. My only hope then will be that in 4 billion years, the collision of the Andromeda Galaxy with the Milky Way will throw some solar system's orbit to intersect with wherever I'm drifting at the time. Considering that, I'll ask again, and I'll speak slowly this time. Is the jump drive ready for another jump?
You made your point, Skippy, I said with a touch of anger. I didn't appreciate him bullying Desai. How about this, Mr. Smartass? You need to show us how to analyze the status of the jump drive. We're not doing that now, unless you want another delay.
Is the jump drive ready?
Of course it is.
You never let me have any fun.
You can find some type of fun that doesn't involve talking about the ship exploding. Program the autopilot for another jump and let's get moving. Also put together a briefing for us tomorrow about what we did wrong and right with that last jump.
Aye, aye, Captain. You will be dazzled by the brilliance of my PowerPoint slides.
When we left the now-dormant wormhole near Earth, Skippy had programmed a course to bring us to an abandoned Kristang space station. The Kristang had built a space station in orbit around the innermost planet of a red dwarf star, not because the planet or the star were in any way interesting. What was interesting were the shattered remains of an elder starship in orbit around the innermost planet. A treasure trove well worth the expense of the Kristang building and maintaining a space station to establish a permanent presence there. Sometime around 300 years ago, there had been a fight between the Kristang there, or a rival clan had raided the station, because a major battle had damaged the station badly enough for the place to be abandoned ever since. The abandoned space station was both the closest and easiest site for us to investigate. Closest, because of the roundabout journey we had to take through multiple wormholes, still meant we wouldn't reach the first site for 38 days. 38 dull, boring days cruising through isolated interstellar space, jumping, recharging engines, jumping again, and occasionally transiting wormholes.
The first 2 weeks after leaving Earth behind were reasonably stimulating, with our new merry band of pirates getting used to being in space, being aboard a starship, being aboard a captured alien starship. Setting up a training routine kept people interested, which was critical for keeping Special Forces types sharp and focused. The first 2 weeks included a first-time jump for most of the crew, their first wormhole transit, a lot of first things. Firsts were good. Firsts were interesting. Firsts held people's attention and kept them from getting bored. Then the tedium set in. Even the pilots, the only people aboard who needed to actually do anything other than eat, exercise, and sleep, got bored with their regular duties. Mostly, the pilot duty consisted of waiting for jump engines to charge, Skippy to program a jump into the autopilot, and the chief pilot on duty pressing a button. There was always at least a little tension following a jump, when the Dutchman's sensor net determined whether there were other ships around. The crew on duty and the CIC scanned the sensors. The two pilots had fingers poised next to buttons for triggering a pre-programmed emergency jump away. Then, when nothing was detected, after 5 minutes, the all-clear signal was given and everyone went back to the tedium of routine. The pilots spent most of their time, unless they were sleeping, but often including while eating and running on a treadmill in the gym, learning how to fly first our Theranan Star Carrier, then our beat-up Kristang frigate, and finally Theranan dropships. One of our new pilots, a hotshot French flyboy who came to the Dutchman from serving as a test pilot for the Raphael fighter, told me the training was beyond tough. It was crushing, impossible. And he was one of Desai's best students. I told him that Captain Desai had flown a dropship, then a frigate, then a star carrier with zero training in combat. And the guy did have a point. I talked to Desai and Skippy about adjusting the tempo of the flight training. After the first 2 weeks, the new pilots adjusted to drinking from the fire hose. Desai started sleeping more than 4 hours a night. Boredom was bad for regular people. Boredom for gung-ho elite spec ops people could be deadly. The third week of our pleasure cruise, two Indian paratroopers suffered broken bones in a training accident. Thanks to Dr. Skippy's magical use of Theranan medical technology, their broken bones would heal fully in 2 weeks. Unfortunately, they couldn't resume normal training until they were fully healed. When we arrived at our first target, those two paratroopers would be unable to join their fellows in any action. They'd either be staying aboard the Dutchman or operating combots. I went to the ship's sick bay. Nobody wanted to call it an infirmary, as that implied a Special Forces soldier could be infirm, which was unsatisfactory. The two mildly chagrined paratroopers were sitting on the two small Theranan beds. Not actually beds, they were some sort of form-fitting gel. Both already had their broken legs encased in hard sleeves with thin tubes connected to the beds. The tubes provided nutrients and nanomachines that knitted the bones and tissues back together, all controlled by Dr. Skippy, the mad scientist. Both of the injured men were eager to get mobile as soon as possible, of course. I'd already talked to Skippy to assure he didn't release them from sickbay until they weren't likely to further injure themselves by overdoing their rehab exercises. Sickbay was crowded with me, the two injured men, and six scientists who were trying to understand the Theranan technology Skippy was using. "Are you learning how all this equipment works?" I asked the doctors. "No," said Skippy before any of the doctors could reply. "That would be a huge waste of time, I've told you that. You don't need clumsy monkeys poking around your insides with crude knives when Dr. Skippy can fix everyone up with medical magic. Real medicine, not the idiot guesswork you monkeys use." "Yes," I said, irritated at having this conversation again. "You have told me that, and I've told you that if, or I should say, when, you find the collective and leave us, our own doctors need to be able to use this equipment to care for the crew." "Never going to happen." "That is unsat. For crying out loud, stop flapping your jaws for a minute and listen to me. You might learn something. I doubt it, but miracles do happen." Skippy sounded peeved, more than usual. "This equipment relies entirely on nanoscale technology. I'm able to control the nanomachines by the picosecond, and they can move individual atoms around to assemble or disassemble molecules as needed. The equipment was designed to be controlled by Theranan Cybernetics through their medical AI. It's a particularly stupid AI. Even you may be able to beat it at chess." Wait, what am I saying? No, that's crazy talk. Don't know what I was thinking. "It's a limited AI, and the system architecture doesn't have the capacity for me to load anything useful into it. It barely has the memory to store details of human anatomy and physiology. Real physiology, not the ignorant guesses you monkeys have in your medical journals. Without me controlling and coordinating the nanomachines, the whole system doesn't work, since your doctors don't have cybernetics, and Theranin cybernetics can't be adapted to humans. There is no way you monkeys can use any of this equipment by yourselves. You done? Barely got started, but that's enough explanation for you. Fine. You are arguably the most intelligent being in the galaxy right now. That we know of, right? I am by far the most intelligent being in the galaxy. It's about time you gave me the respect. Since you are so incredibly smart, then you should be able to figure something out for us to have even some limited sort of control of this medical equipment, at least enough for basic medical care. Consider it a challenge, Skippy. A challenge? Building an escalator to the center of the galaxy would be a challenge. Teaching monkeys to use real technology? Impossible, he complained. That impressed me, Skippy. I knew he couldn't resist that. I'll give you mad props if you can do that. Great. Fine. You want the impossible. What am I supposed to do, build a really, really tiny pair of tweezers so you can move molecules around by hand? Stupid monkeys. Damn it, I hate my life. I should have stayed on a dusty shelf in that warehouse. Bye, Skippy. Have fun. I left him grumbling behind me. When I was done in sickbay, including listening to the two paratroopers apologize for having rendered themselves temporarily combat ineffective and me assuring them that accidents happen, I hurried to the galley for dinner. Tonight's meal was meatloaf or salmon, and I was eager to get there before all the meatloaf was gone. There was enough meatloaf. What there wasn't much of was lively conversation. Everyone was beginning to get bored already with the routine. The time and vast distances we had to travel had sunk into the people's minds, and the crew were subdued. That, and the training accident, had put a damper on morale. Ugh, this room is totally dead. Why all the gloomy faces? Skippy's annoying voice came out of the speaker in the ceiling. It's been a tough week, Skippy, I grumbled while staring at my plate. The meatloaf had gotten slightly cold. Serves me right for showing up late for dinner. And then spending too much time chatting instead of eating. It was okay. It had some strange spice in it that I was trying to figure. Nutmeg? Yes, nutmeg. Not a lot of it, but who puts nutmeg in meatloaf? Looking across the table at Lieutenant Hendrick's salmon in a maple and ginger glaze, I was beginning to regret my dinner choice. Tonight's dinner had been cooked by our U.S. Special Forces teams, the Rangers and SEALs. And we've been cruising in interstellar space in total darkness with nothing to look at. We could all use a change of scenery. Skippy had a point, though. I needed to do something to boost crew morale. Maybe I should assign someone to be the ship's morale officer. One of the PowerPoint decks that I was supposed to study probably had some advice about maintaining unit morale. How did a crew keep up morale on a nuclear missile submarine? Those boomers were submerged and silent for months at a time. Like us, they didn't have anything to look at. Unlike them, we had windows. I know what your problem is, Colonel Joe, Skippy announced. You need to get laid. Hey, Major Tammy, you should mate with Joe. Skippy! I almost choked on meatloaf, and Major Sims, who had just taken a sip of water, spewed it across the table in front of her. The soldier seated next to her had to pat her on the back to keep her from choking. What? You're a male? She's a female, and for a monkey, you don't smell too bad. Stop it, I shouted. Everyone in the galley was staring at me. Hey, you know you need some sweet loving soon, Joe. Major Tammy, you should have seen the raging boner he had in the shower this morning. Now Sims had gone from shocked to amused. Her shoulders shook as she tried to suppress a laugh. Everyone was now trying not to look at me and laughing. Putting my head in my hands, I banged my forehead on the table. Skippy? This is private stuff. You don't talk about it in public. I am Major Sims's commanding officer. What, because you're a colonel, you can't bang anyone in your command? Like that matters way out here. Well, you could mate with one of the science team. This is good timing, because most of the women are ovulating this week, so they're extra horny. I saw all the women's faces register shock. Skippy, shut the hell up, I shouted. Man. Talk about ungrateful. I'm trying to get you laid. You're sure not doing well on your own. Don't ask me to be your wingman again.
I didn't ask, and you're a wing nut, not a wingman.
In the future, maybe I needed to consider taking all my meals in my cabin or my office.
Major Sims, I apologize.
She shook her head, still not trying to laugh.
Colonel, we all know Skippy by now. No need to apologize for him.
Thank you. Everyone, I'd appreciate it if this stayed between us, meaning the roughly 20 people in the galley. And since I know that's not going to happen, I added honestly, knowing this was way too juicy not to quickly spread throughout the ship. Keep in mind Skippy said it. I didn't. Damn it. After that, I was never able to look at Major Sims without wondering, you know, what she'd be like in bed. I didn't need any more distractions. Jump, recharge, jump again. It was monotonous, and we had a long way to go to our first target. When we left Earth to find Skippy's magical elder radio, or whatever the hell it really is, we still had the same problem that made us go to Earth in the first place. When we raided the Kristang Asteroid Research Base, we'd found an elder communications node, the thing Skippy thought should allow him to contact the Collective. It hadn't. The stupid thing didn't work, or Skippy didn't know how to make it work, or it worked fine, but there was no Collective to talk to, or it worked, Skippy had contacted the Collective, and they decided he is an asshole and ignored him. I was betting on that last one. Since the first comm node didn't satisfy Skippy, he had wanted to check out the two other sites he knew for certain had intact Elder comm nodes. The two other sites, I had told him even before we went to Earth, were impossible for us to raid. Forget about it. Not going to happen. The first site was on a heavily populated Theranan planet. The second was 9,500 light-years from Earth at an installation controlled by a species with technology superior to the Theranan. Neither site was remotely possible for us to raid, even with the Dutchmen now crewed by badass special forces. Maybe, by some combination of luck, Skippy magic, and a random miracle, we might succeed in raiding one site. The odds were heavily in favor of us failing. Our enemies discovering humans had stolen a Theranan starship and Earth becoming the focus of some very pissed-off aliens. That was not an optimal mission outcome. Before we departed Earth, we, meaning mostly me, had persuaded Skippy to expand his search beyond places confirmed to have his precious comm node to places that were likely to have a comm node. Sites that were known to have a substantial collection of Elder artifacts, even though the Theranan database Skippy downloaded didn't list a comm node in the inventory, could very possibly have a comm node. Skippy said that before the Elders ascended or beamed up or whatever the hell they'd done, comm nodes were scattered all over the galaxy. Skippy had grumbled about trying to predict the location of comm nodes being a waste of time, and that such an analysis would take forever. In this case, forever took him 7 minutes and 12 seconds in meat sack time. After completing his analysis, he had admitted that there were two very promising sites within 3,000 light-years of Earth that were much easier and safer to approach, investigate, and if needed, raid. The first site was another Kristang research base, the space station that had been abandoned after a fight between two or more Kristang factions left it damaged beyond repair. According to the data Skippy had access to, the space station had held a variety of low-value Elder artifacts and various devices and doodads from higher species that the Kristang there had been trying to reverse-engineer for their clan without much success. What Skippy hoped was the Dutchman's sensors could scan the debris field around the station, and our merry band of pirates could board it to see if one of the magic radios were there. Since the wormhole shift, that star system had been ignored by the Kristang, and Skippy thought we wouldn't find anyone there. He thought that, anyway. The second site was going to be a bit tougher for us to investigate, tough enough that I hoped to find an alternative. The good news is that it was a known Elder site that had been located by the Maxulks themselves, but barely explored by anyone. It was a large site. It had been a substantial and busy facility back when the Elders were using it, so Skippy was highly confident we would find a communications node, multiple communications nodes there. The bad news was very bad. First, it was a long distance from Earth, a journey of 4 months to get there from our current position. The journey was longer than it strictly needed to be because we had to avoid several wormhole clusters that were heavily used by the Maxulks. The first part of the bad news was merely inconvenient. The second part of the bad news was dangerous.
extremely dangerous. When the Maxalks found the Elder Site, they had not been looking for nice toys like communications nodes. They had been looking for weapons. Elder weapons. Devices the Elders may not have built as weapons. Devices that could be used for incredible destructive effect. Devices that, according to Skippy, could make stars explode. And exploding a star was a simple trick compared to some of the technology the Elders routinely used. At the time the Maxalks found that Elder site and its massive destructive potential, they already had a substantial arsenal of Elder devices that could be used as weapons against the Rindaloo. According to Skippy's admittedly foggy memories, the Rindaloo discovered that the Maxalks planned to attack them and force their hand. The Maxalks had to accelerate their plans and launch the attack before they were completely ready. The Rindaloo hit back with their own stock of Elder weapons, and a war raged for a brief period before Sentinels detected the use of Elder weapons and struck at both sides. The Sentinels, intelligent monitors left behind by the Elders to prevent unauthorized use of Elder technology by younger species, did not care that the Maxalks had fired first. They did not even seem to care where in the galaxy Elder weapons had been used. Maxalks and Rindaloo star systems, far from the fighting, were hit by Sentinels with devastating effect. The purpose of the Sentinels seemed to be to destroy starfaring civilizations, civilizations capable of abusing Elder technology, whether they had acquired such technology or not. Both the Maxalks and the Rindaloo feared extinction, so powerful and relentless were the Sentinels. Then, suddenly, for no known reason, the Sentinel attack halted, and the Sentinels disappeared and went dormant, sleeping again, but always watchful. Since that time, the shell-shocked Maxalks and Rindaloo had held their Elder weapons in reserve and continued their long war through proxies such as the Theranin and Jirapatha, who had proxies of their own. And the Elder site that the Maxalks had been exploring at the time the Sentinels struck had been off-limits to everyone by general agreement. Skippy thought that since he was built by the Elders, he could get us there without being detected by the extensive web of sensors left by the Maxalks. His plan sucked. After a 4-month journey to get close to the site, we would fly in normal space for another 6 months, sneaking up on the target by crawling slowly along. The Flying Dutchman could not slow down much, as firing the engines would risk detection. So we would need to fly across the final distance to the target in dropships. Landing teams would spend almost a month in dropships under Skippy's crappy plan. After we located and picked up a communications node, the landing teams would fly back to the Dutchman, and the ship would continue traveling silently through normal space for another 4 months before we could risk a jump. Skippy's plan sucked. He wanted us to commit to a 14-month voyage into an area of space that was closely monitored by both the Maxalks and Elder Sentinels because he thought we had a good chance of finding a comm node. I hated his plan. I told him that. I also did not have an alternative plan. Before committing to the second target, we were going to investigate the first target, the supposedly abandoned Kristang space station. Hopefully, we would find a comm node there. If not, I had maybe a week to think up an alternative to Skippy's second target. I needed to put my thinking cap on.